everybody, and welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we are going to be talking about Season 4, Episode 10, Heaven and Hell, written by Eric Kripke, with a story credit for Trevor Sands. It's the only credit he has in all of Supernatural, and wow, it kind of makes you wonder where this story idea came from. So I don't know which aspects of it went to him, but he never worked on Supernatural again afterwards. So interesting that he got to help come up with an idea to frame some of the biggest pieces of what we think of as canonically angelic stuff. And it was directed by J. Miller Tobin, which is his third of four episodes he directed for Supernatural. I have a feeling that because this episode just contains so much, it's so dense with important stuff that will remain important throughout canon, as far as angels and heaven, that it's probably going to be easier to talk about it in real time as we watch than it would be for me to just start lecturing about it right now, because otherwise we could go off all the tangents and that would be bad. We learn about angel grace, what it is, and the tip of the iceberg about how heaven works, the politics of heaven. And then right at the end of the episode, we learn part of what Dean's been hiding from Sam since he got back from hell. It wasn't 4 months for him like it was for Sam. It was more like 40 years. And that after 30 years of torture, he broke, got up off the rack to torture others instead. And yes, that almost answers the question of why Dean was susceptible to the ghost sickness back in Yellow Fever, but the true reason isn't revealed until the end of the next episode, which aired as the mid-season premiere, nearly 2 months after this episode originally aired, and possibly the only interesting thing about the next episode. Most people forget it even exists. Anyway, just so we understand what I'm talking about here, Dean didn't just torture souls in hell, he liked it. Just like Sam doesn't just trust Ruby because she saved his life and the whole story we heard in last week's episode. But he's still got that whole demon blood drinking secret that he's not telling Dean about, and he likes it. So much manipulation is happening in Chuck's big story here, so we'll get into the nitty-gritty of all of that while we watch. Though I just want to point out that in my understanding of how hell works and the hell time of Dean's experiences there felt like 40 years and everybody just assumed that was standard hell time. Well, we know that canonically that is not true because Adam will eventually say in season 15 to Michael that they were only locked up for 10 years in the cage, which lines up with the reality of how long they were locked up in the cage. So we've seen other aspects of hell as well over the years, and that lines up exactly with how Earth time passes. We know that purgatory time passes the same as Earth time, that heaven time passes the same as Earth time. So why would hell be different, except in specific cases where it's required for the torture of souls? And Dean was on the speed run because he needed to do the thing to break the seal. They were pushing him to that as fast as they could, and it took him 30 years of dilated time to do it. So there's no way we all would have sat around for 30 years watching Sam Winchester just mope around the earth without his brother, you know? That would have been really anticlimactic to the whole apocalypse arc, so they needed to push him into that. So this is how they achieved that, because they didn't want to have Dean break in hell after only 3 months. That's just kind of sad. So they gave him 30 years. That said, that's my understanding of hell time, and that Dean had a very specific experience for very specific reasons, because it needed to happen that way for the story. Literally, Chuck's story, the narrative of the Supernatural universe as we understand it. But we do have some good bonus stuff for this episode as well. We have a deleted scene where the entire scene contains new information and gives us so much context for the conflict between Cass and Uriel, the larger picture of what's happening in heaven, the fact that they're not permitted to kill Sam or Ruby, despite Uriel saying that he wanted to, because of the part Heaven believes Ruby must play in the unfolding story, something that Uriel and Cass do not know about. So already we're learning from this outtake scene that nobody saw until it was released on the DVD after the season ended and everybody knew the trick of the season. But it feels like this scene would have given us too much information about the doubt that Cass was experiencing and the fact that he really didn't know what the larger plan was. So I can see why they chose to cut it here, but I really wish they'd left it in. And it's 1 minute and 47 seconds long, and there is video of it online, so nobody has an excuse not to watch it. But it really helps understand the context of Cass's rebellion and the difference between that and Uriel's chosen form of rebellion, of just siding with Lucifer over Heaven because he didn't trust or like Heaven. But it's clear from that that Uriel also did not know the bigger picture, that Sam Winchester needed to survive. He wanted to kill Sam and Ruby in that scene. It gives a lot more context to what disobedience of Heaven's orders means to angels. They're talking about killing Anna, and Cass accuses Uriel of borderline disobedience in his desire to kill Sam and Ruby. And Cass is like, you know what I would have to do if you disobeyed, implying exactly what we're trying to do to Anna right now, kill you. But it's also important to Cass himself, who's about to go through a crisis about this exact thing over the second half of the season. Cass's fears about experiencing these, quote, doorways to doubt that lead him to a more human-centered perspective, doubting his orders and the leadership in Heaven. If none of those facts about this 1 minute and 47 second long clip interests you enough to click through to it, there's always the fact that out of all 15 seasons of Supernatural, out of every appearance that Castiel has ever had on screen, he's got the fluffiest hair in that cutscene. And it's adorable. And you should just definitely go check out his hair, because I wish his hair was like that more often. Anyway, I have no idea why the scene was cut. I can imagine that they felt it gave away too much, but I know why it was included back in the DVD extras, because it's just too important to not know these details about these characters. We have another CW promo video for the episode, 20 whole seconds long. We have interviews. The ones that I was able to find archived online include Jen Padalecki talking about Ruby's motivations. She jokes at one point in that interview that Ruby had nowhere else to go, so of course she would hang out with Sam. I mean, she wasn't going to spoil the big thing that she was ordered to go back and, you know, do everything with Sam. But Jen Padalecki in the interview suggested that, oh, maybe she could have just gone to Detroit. But Detroit in Supernatural, especially considering it's Ruby, the devotee of Lucifer, who brought Sam to the point of freeing Lucifer. It was always supposed to happen here in Detroit. So it's kind of funny if it was just an offhand flippant comment, which it likely was. So who knew? She could have just gone to Detroit. And we also have an interview with Thunderbird Dinwiddie talking about Pamela's return to Supernatural. And with all that out of the way, I'm really eager to move on to the then segment, so I'm just going to do that now. We start off with the reminder that Lilith is trying to break the 66 seals to free Lucifer from hell, and that it's Anna explaining this to her doctor in the last episode as a demon comes for her and she attacks him to escape the hospital. We're reminded of Ruby coming to Sam and Dean with the information about Anna having escaped and that demons are trying to find her. And then we go all the way back to the beginning of the season, when Bobby introduced us to Pamela Barnes, best damn psychic in the state, and her trying to see Castiel's true form burned out her eyes. We get a reminder of Anna and what she already knows, that Dean was in hell and Cass pulled him out. We get reminder shots not only of the handprint on Dean's shoulder, but of Cass flexing his wings in the barn, and a reminder of why the demons want her. Because she can listen to what the angels are saying. We're reminded of Uriel's existence and that he's a specialist in destroying towns. We're then reminded of Alistair's entrance from last week's episode, where Dean was shocked to see him again because he knew him from hell. And then at the end of last week's episode, not only do the demons want Anna, but the angels want her dead. And then we come to now. Uriel is all gung-ho about killing Anna, while Sam and Dean attempt to defend her. Cass agrees with Dean's assessment that they are heartless sons of bitches. Ha, for the angel that another angel will one day say has too much heart. For him to admit his own heartlessness here is kind of shocking. Sam and Dean attempt to defend Anna as just an innocent girl. And Uriel says she's far from innocent. She's worse than the abomination that you're screwing. They show a shot of Ruby. So Uriel's opinion of Anna is lower than that of a demon. We know why. I mean, she chose to rip out her grace and fall. To Uriel, there's nothing worse. Dean effectively refuses to hand Anna over. And Uriel's like, who's going to stop us? This demon whore. And he grabs Ruby, throws her across the room, and then holds her by the neck and is about to smite her. When Dean actually walks over and diverts Uriel's attention, he attacks. And Uriel takes him down too, punching and fighting him. Meanwhile, Cass walks back toward Anna, where the only thing standing between him and the room where Anna is Sam, and Sam is just like, Cass, don't do this. Instead of fighting Sam, Cass just reaches up and boops Sam to sleep, and he just drops to the ground. Uriel did not choose that method, even though he absolutely could have. He just decided he wanted to fight. And remember, they have orders not to kill Ruby, so I don't know what he thought he was going to do to her there, but he's not allowed to smite her, and we only learn that from that outtake clip. Uriel, however, is getting a kick out of beating up Dean Winchester, even though he knows that Dean is important to Heaven's big mission. He obviously does not know why, because he's just loving beating on Dean. So clearly Uriel just really hates humanity. Just as Cass is about to reach for the door handle to Anna's room, there's some like lightning flashing and zappy noises. He looks up like something's happening to him. He blinks and is yoinked away as if pulled by a string and disappears. And for just a split second, you can see Cass's wings as he gets blown away by what we'll learn is an angel banishing sigil. And then a moment later, it takes Uriel as well. Ruby gets up and goes over to Sam to make sure he's okay. And he's like groggy waking up. And Dean runs back into the room where Anna is and finds her with blood all over her hands and the angel banishing sigil drawn on the mirror. Anna asks if the angels are gone. Dean's like, did you kill them? And she's like, no, I sent them away. And they're all confused, like, how did you know how to do this? And she's like, I just knew. And while we see Dean looking at this sigil drawn in her own blood, and Anna looking shell-shocked at the fact that she was able to pull this sigil out of thin air and banish the angels, we cut to the title card. Sam and Dean are now truly curious about who Anna actually is. That's Sam's task. Meanwhile, Dean's gonna try and get Anna somewhere safe because she may have banished the angels, but they're not going to stay away forever now. So they head back to Bobby's place. He's got that great panic room, even if it may not be angel-proof. It's definitely demon-proof. It's the best thing they've got to protect her. While Dean's getting Anna settled in the panic room, Ruby complains because she can't get in the panic room because she is a demon, proving that it works, at least against demons. Ruby tosses Dean a couple of hex bags, and Dean is confused at first, and Ruby tells him that they will hide them from all comers, angels, demons, everything. Nobody will be able to find you while you have that hex bag. Dean actually turns to her and says, thanks, Ruby. And he says it sincerely, and he means it, and she looks kind of shocked. Dean gives Anna one of the hex bags and asks her what's playing on angel radio. Nothing right now. Dead silence, which is possibly a good thing, but possibly a really terrible thing. Anna asks if they're in real serious trouble then. She asks if Sam and Dean are scared. And Dean takes a look out at Ruby in the hallway, who looks scared. And you know Dean's scared. And he psychs himself up and just tells her, nah, with a little smile. And it's like, wow, if Anna buys this, she truly is terrified. Sam calls down to Dean, letting him know that he's back. Dean tells Ruby to keep an eye on Anna, tells Anna to stay inside the panic room where she's safe, and goes upstairs to talk to Sam. Conveniently, Bobby is not even home. He's in the Dominican working a case, which how he found a case in the Dominican Republic, I do not know. It's never explained what he was doing down there, but maybe he was just on vacation, though that seems really unlikely for Bobby during the apocalypse. So we have to assume, yes, he's working on a case and just conveniently not there to be gruff and helpful and in the way. Sam has returned with Anna's psychiatric records, which reveal that this was not her first psychiatric episode. When she was 2.5, she was convinced her father was not her real father and that her real father was incredibly angry with her, like wanted to kill her angry. And yeah, Dean, that is kind of heavy for a 2-year-old. Apparently she saw a child psychologist who helped her get past that and then just grew up to have a totally normal life after that. And then Dean says something to the effect of, so what's happened now? Why go through all this again? And then that's when Anna pipes in because she's come upstairs and overheard them talking about her. She's like, why don't you just ask me to my face? And Sam is apologetic. He's like, you're right. We should be including you in this. They ask her if she knows anything about what the angel said about being guilty. And Anna's like, I don't know. Tell me. Tell me why my life has been leveled and my parents are dead. And she has no idea what's going on with her, but she'd give anything to find out. So Dean goes and gets someone who can help with that. Pamela. Despite having lost her eyes because of Castiel, she can still kind of see, and I'm putting that in finger quotes, she can see things. She's like, yeah, same as I know that's a demon, and that poor girl is Anna. And she looks right at each of them as she says this. It's not just that she knows who's supposed to be there. She knows right where they are in time and space here. Pamela is very happy to be there, and she takes Anna's hands and introduces herself, and she's like, I'm excited to help you with this. And Anna's like, thank you. That's so nice of you. And Pamela's like, oh, not really, not at all. Any chance I get to dick over an angel, she's going to take it, because the angels took something from her. And she takes off her glasses and reveals white eyes. She's like, yeah, demon-y, I know, but they're just plastic. She's not happy about having lost her vision to an angel, even though he was warning her not to, but I can still understand her feelings behind this. Pamela takes Anna and leads her into the panic room and begins hypnotizing her. As Anna falls under the hypnosis, Pamela reaches out and shuts her eyes. She can even, quote, see to do tiny little details like that. She knew that Anna's eyes were still open and closed them without, you know, like poking her in the eye or anything, sticking her finger up her nose. Pamela starts by asking her how she can hear the angels and how she knew how to work that spell. And Anna still doesn't know, not even under hypnosis. Pamela asks next, and your father, what's his name? And Anna names her human father, Rich Milton. Pamela then prods, go deeper, go further back, to when she was just a couple of years old. And Anna starts twitching. She's like, I don't want to. Pamela keeps pushing her to do it. Just one look, that's all we need. Pamela asks her one more time, what's your real dad's name? And then Anna starts screaming, no, 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 he's gonna kill me. And she sits up, the lights start exploding, the door to the panic room slams shut. Dean goes over to help restrain her, to calm her down, and she just punches him and flings him across the room. Pamela then stops trying to get a name and just quickly breaks Anna out of the hypnosis. Anna sits up and thanks Pamela. She's like, that was very helpful. It's like her entire demeanor has changed. She's like, I remember who I am. And Dean's like, I'll bite, who are you? And Anna says, I'm an angel. The first thing that Anna says when they all get upstairs is, "Don't be afraid. I'm not like the others." And Ruby and Pamela both agree that's not very reassuring. They both have angel issues. And then we learn the whole story, that in heaven she was Cass and Uriel's supervisor, and that she's positive that she has a death sentence on her head because she disobeyed, which is just about the worst thing an angel can do. She fell to earth and became human. Sam is very confused by this. He's like, so wait, so angels can just become human? And Anna describes the process, that it was incredibly painful. She describes it as being as painful as cutting out your kidney with a butter knife. She cut out her grace, and Dean's like, come again? And she explains that it's energy. So it's not her personality. She's theoretically got the same personality right now that she did as an angel. She's got the same knowledge. She's got the same intellect. She's got the same understanding of the universe. Nothing about her has changed. Anna says since the demons would torture her, she's a flesh and blood angel that they could torture for information. And the angels just want her dead. The only way to protect herself is to find her grace. She has no idea where it fell because she was also falling at like 10,000 miles an hour at the time. But Sam's like, what do you mean literally fell? Like the way a human eye could see, like a comet or a meteor? Because Sam can track meteor showers or odd astronomical events around the time of Anna's birth. Sam explains that 9 months before Anna was born, a meteor was spotted breaking up over Ohio, where Anna was born. The same night, another meteor was spotted over Kentucky, which doesn't really narrow things down too terribly much because Kentucky's kind of large, but it's a start. And as Sam is explaining all this to Ruby, Ruby apologizes for bringing this whole mess to him in the first place. Ruby tells Sam, who's trying to keep a positive outlook, that, you know, we'll muddle through this. Ruby's like, no, it's Godzilla versus Mothra. You do not want to get between these two armies, the army of heaven and the army of hell. You'll just be crushed in the middle. Sam's like, what, so we just dump Anna and run? Like, let one or the other of them have her? No, that's not happening. I know you're scared of the angels. And Ruby's like, it's not the angels I'm scared of. It's Alistair. And Sam's like, Alistair? Ruby describes him as practically the Grand Inquisitor, Picasso with a razor. So Sam gets that this guy is skilled at torture. He knows that Dean recognized him. Sam must be having ideas and thoughts about what Dean must have gone through, even in a tiny measure here. Ruby tells Sam that he needs to pull Alistair out of that body and send him back to the pit now, and that he should have been able to, but that his abilities have grown flabby. He needs to tone up. And Sam's like, yeah, and how am I supposed to do that? And Ruby says, you know how. And we, of course, know that she means consuming her blood. And Sam is adamant that he's not doing that anymore, though he looks uncomfortable about it, like he's tempted. When you first watch this and you have no idea what it is that he needs to do, it feels different than when you know that she's trying to pressure him to drink her blood again. And he's refusing. But he's already got that, wow, I'm an addict, kind of twitchiness about him. He's saying no right now, but ooh, he really doesn't want to. And Ruby's like, well, you better hope that Anna gets her groove back then, because otherwise we are all dead. Later that night, Anna's just standing out in the junkyard when Dean drives back from taking Pamela back home. Dean apologizes on Pamela's behalf, saying that after the last time with the angels, this is just too rich for her blood. She doesn't want any part of this. And it's totally understandable. Anna suggests that Dean and Sam should do the same. You know, distance themselves from this as much as possible. Dean's like, yeah, we're just not that smart. On his drive, though, Dean has clearly had a lot of time to think about all of this, about angels, about this bigger picture that he knows nothing about why heaven would bother to save him from hell. What do they want with him? And Anna says she's sorry, she just doesn't know what that plan is. And it clearly happened after she fell, But it also goes to say just how few angels really knew about this whole apocalypse plan. Because if Anna had been Cass and Uriel's supervisor, even during the span of Dean's lifetime, before she fell in the mid-80s, even as their supervisor, she knew nothing about this plan for Dean Winchester. So what were the hopes of Cass or Uriel or any of the other angelic grunts, as Zachariah will call them eventually, supposed to have known about these larger plans? Even though we know they were all set in motion long before Sam and Dean Winchester were born, long before their parents ever met, even. This was foretold apparently since the beginning of time, Gabriel will tell them eventually. So very few angels really seemed to be in the know about that. So she may not have an answer to that question for Dean, but he has another question for her. Why would she want to fall? Why would she want to be human? And Anna's like, you don't mean that. And Dean's like, I don't. Of course I do. Being human kind of sucks. Dean points out sort of the low parts of humanity. We're all just running around confused and scared. And Anna's like, I don't know, there's good parts to it too. There's loyalty, forgiveness, love. And Dean counters with guilt. And Anna eventually counters with sex. And Dean's like, okay, yeah, you got me there. You know, just to try and lighten the mood a little bit. But he's still confused as to why she would have chosen this for herself when she was an all-powerful being. She wanted to feel every emotion, even the bad ones, and why she'd give anything not to have to go back. She does not want her grace back. To her, it's the worst thing she could do. She wants to be human. Dean's like, feelings are overrated if you ask me. And Anna's like, beats being an angel. Dean can't even fathom that, though. He's like, how is that even possible? You guys are perfect and powerful and you don't doubt anything. God or reality and none of it. And Anna counters with, yeah, perfect like a marble statue. Cold, no choice, only obedience. And this is something that I wonder if is just a symptom of her level of not knowing bigger plans of stuff, but she believes that only four angels have even seen God's face. And I'm assuming that's the archangels. But she knows that she is not one of them. They have to take it on faith that there even is a God. Faith that they're killed if they don't have. She describes the last 2,000 years of her existence before she fell as stationed on Earth, out on the road, alone, waiting for orders from an unknowable father who, and then Dean just starts laughing and he's like, yeah, that sounds familiar. And right there, as Dean and Anna begin to bond over this shared experience of their absent fathers issuing orders while being largely absent from their lives, Sam comes out. He found something, a miracle tree that grew almost overnight in Kentucky. Right around where Anna's grace supposedly fell. But I'm going to stop here before we get into the discussion of that scene, because everything that Anna just said for us will become Castiel's arc over the next 13 seasons of the show. And it really has been the arc that Cass has been on, this fear of disobedience, which Anna has just said is their greatest crime an angel can commit, disobeying an order. And we know how Cass has been about our orders are just, our orders are righteous, we're only following orders since we first met him. But we also know that he's beginning to show doubt in where these orders are coming from or whether or not they are truly just. He thinks that there's something rotten happening and he's beginning to understand and side with humanity, similar to how Anna did before she fell. Everything that happened to her before her first appearance on this show is kind of what happens to Cass from this point forward. From the moment she fell, the moment he begins to fall in season 5. But I mean, he even makes that choice to rebel by the end of this season. So everything that Anna brought to the show and taught us about angels and the nature of grace, The fact that she would do anything not to have to take it back. She wants to stay human. She wants to live her life, but she knows she can't because the angels will hunt her down and kill her, or the demons will hunt her down and torture her. Those are her options right now. She's been given no other choice, which, again, the worst thing you can say on this show. And yeah, it kind of sucks that they created this really interesting female character just to give an arc to a male character who'd already been established, introduced, and was shown to have a lot of chemistry with the cast that already exists. And that Anna kind of acted as a stand-in and as an exemplar of the template for finding humanity for an angel. And then they didn't really do anything with her character after that. Her character still had so much potential. Like all side characters on this show, or the vast majority of side characters on this show, they're kind of viewed as disposable by the plot, and it sucks. She could have remained on the show for years to come, being an occasional guest or having a human life or doing something or anything other than just being broken and dying for the sake of other characters' grief. So, yet one more victim on the altar of Supernatural's formula. Aside from that, let's focus on what we learned about the canon of angels and grace from her, because that's the story that Cass is about to engage in himself. And it's a sentiment that Cass will express multiple times. I'd rather be here with you than what I'm being forced to do by circumstance. He says that in season 6, you know, much of the time I'd rather be here. He laments the loss of his own humanity after he feels he has no other choice but to take his grace back, because it's either take that grace back or die on the spot, be tortured to death. Literally the choice that Anna is facing right now. At another point, he will lose his memory and get a chance to live a semi-human life with powers, much the way Anna has some powers right now. He won't remember that he's an angel. It's another aspect that makes Cass's arc contain all the elements of Anna's that we learn here in 2 very short episodes. He's in a psychiatric hospital. When he wakes up, he tries to avoid taking any responsibility for anything. Even on the surface level of their stories, Cass will eventually go through every aspect of Anna's story on his own journey to humanity. Until the show just, you know, decides to throw him in the dumpster instead of letting him actually win that one. Oh well. I mean, it did the same thing to Sam and Dean too, so like, you know, he's not unique in that fact. It's just particularly galling that his entire arc goes right back to this point. And just like Anna, he ends up getting sacrificed for it instead of being allowed to have it. And when you continuously torment characters with, we know exactly what you want, and we know exactly why you can't have it, or, you know, since when do you get what you deserve, through the entire series, and then in the final episodes of the show, you do not give the characters at least some of what they deserve. You give them absolutely the opposite of what they deserve. That's just stupid. I'm sorry, that's just stupid. It's dumbass writing, okay? Anyway, we're not here to talk about the finale. We're here to talk about this episode, in which they are attempting to locate a miracle tree that grew in 6 months and baffles scientists. And just as a small aside here, the tree looks remarkably similar to one that Sam and Dean are just randomly parked under in the series finale, where they're talking about the vamp mime clowns that, you know, God, it's such an idiotic conversation. I don't even want to recall it, but I believe it's the same tree they used as Anna's grace tree, which the irony of that is just so painful as to stab one through the heart with some rebar. Okay. Moving on. Anna says that yes, her grace, if it had landed in that field, could have done that, could have grown a whole oak tree in 6 months. Because it's sort of the opposite of a bomb. It's not destruction, it's pure creation. So they all start driving towards Kentucky. Sam and Dean in the front seat, Anna and Ruby in the back seat, And Dean just laughs to himself, and Ruby's like, what? Dean's like, angel and a demon in the back seat. It's like a setup to a bad joke or a penthouse forum letter. And Sam's like, dude, reality, porn, you're confusing them again. Dean's like, you call this reality? Like, this is some messed up stuff they're experiencing here. And even just thinking back to where they were and what their knowledge level was at the beginning of season one, this is like crazy times above their pay grade at that time. Now all of a sudden angels exist? Okay. They hardly ever even saw demons before the beginning of the series. And now they've got angels and demons both battling over some poor fallen angel girl. And they have to protect her, and Dean's been to hell, and it's just the leveling up that they've done over even just these first four seasons, three and a half seasons, is insane. And Dean's right. This is reality? Okay. Sure, Sam. But they're living it anyway. But their whole drive out to Kentucky was for naught. They find the tree. Anna touches it. She can tell just by feeling the tree that someone has taken her grace. It's not there anymore. They found some sort of barn or something to hide out in. Dean's like, well, we've still got the hex bags. We should head back to the panic room. And Ruby's like, what, forever? Dean's like, well, it's better than just sitting here waiting for them to come kill us. Finally, Anna cuts in. She's listening to the angels again. They're talking again. She describes it as like a recording, a loop, over and over again. It just keeps saying that Dean Winchester gives us Anna, or we hurl him back to damnation. Dean looks absolutely horrified by this notion, and Sam is the one who asks Anna if she knows of any weapon that will hurt an angel. And Anna's like, what, to kill them? And Sam's like, yeah, if you got that. And Anna's like, well, nothing I can get right now. You know, an angel blade, which she can't grab out of thin air when she's human, one would have to suppose, because no angel on this show has produced an angel blade yet. As far as we know, angels don't carry them yet. And the fact that it becomes a major plot point in an upcoming episode, the fact that the only thing that can kill an angel is another angel, blah, 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 and who's killing these angels, and what kind of magic spell are they using to... No, y'all... Starting at the beginning of next season, every angel's going to have one of these, and you're going to use them all the time. It's your default go-to. So, like, how did none of the angels have that as a weapon at this point? Chuck was at it. He was editing new information in as if it had always existed. Shame on him. Even with the threat against his life, Dean is still trying to come up with alternatives. We should call Bobby and get him back. And Sam's angrily tells him, like, what's he going to tell us that we don't already know? And Dean yells even louder. He's like, I don't know, but we got to think of something. You know, he definitely doesn't want to go back to hell, but he also is not about to hand Anna over to die. A little while later, Dean's outside on the hood of the Impala with a flashlight reading a big book looking for some sort of information that may help them. And Anna comes walking up and he's like, you holding up okay? And she's like, yeah, trying to. Anna tells him, thanks for everything, you know, for trying to help me. She appreciates the fact that they've risked their lives to help her, even if they're failing at it. Dean's like, yeah, can the speech. Participation trophy suck ass. Is he will only be satisfied if they actually can save her. Anna then says, maybe I don't deserve to be saved. And that even harks back to Cass's first meeting with Dean. When he looks at Dean, he's like, what, you don't think you deserve to be saved? And Dean was literally torturing souls in hell and enjoying it. Of course he doesn't feel like he deserves to be saved. But Anna, he can't understand why she would feel that way about herself. She's not a horrible person like Dean feels he is, you know? Why wouldn't she feel she deserved to be saved? And it's like, Dean, dude, you're here risking your life to try and save an innocent person. You deserve to be saved too, you moron. She goes on to explain that she disobeyed and compares her actions to Lucifer's, who also disobeyed. She describes her crime as murder one for angels, that what she did is their most unforgivable crime. And Anna's like, I've got to pay for what I did. Maybe I should just turn myself in. And Dean's like, yeah, we've all done things we gotta pay for. And Dean just looks extremely guilty. He can't even meet Anna's eyes after he tells her that. Anna gets right up in his face and tells him, there's something I need to tell you, and you're not gonna like it. A week ago, I heard the angels talking about what you did in hell. And she reassures him that it wasn't his fault and tells him that he should forgive himself. Dean's like, I can't talk about that. And Anna's like, I know. But when you can, there are people who love you who will understand and forgive you too. And then she leans up and kisses him. And Dean's like, what was that for? And Anna's like, our last night on Earth, you know. And Dean's like, you're stealing my best line. And goes back in for another kiss. And we get the weird, steamy sex scene in the backseat of the Impala, which bizarrely focuses on the handprint as this fallen angel rests her hand carefully, like watches herself do it against the handprint that Cass left on Dean's shoulder. Almost like she's standing in proxy of a different angel here, the one who actually left that mark on him. If that's not enough, towards the end of the scene, in the foggy windows of the Impala, her hand slides down the glass, leaving another print. So, yeah, if you forget the handprint during this scene, and if you don't think about Castiel once during this whole scene, I don't know what to tell you. You are absolutely missing the point. If everything about Anna's arc is going to be later tied into Cass's arc, then, Season 4, folks. Meanwhile, back in the barn, Sam has fallen asleep over his book that he was researching in, and Root's like Ruby was waiting for that. She leaves the barn, goes out to a deserted crossroads, probably far away, hopefully, and burns her hex bag that's hiding her from Alistair. And of course, he immediately shows up. They have a very civil discussion for a couple of demons who are there to threaten each other. Alistair holds up the knife and asks if Ruby wanted this back, and she even tells him to keep it. Ruby just came to talk. And Alistair is derisively like, what? Talk about how a demon is protecting an angel? We really should revoke your membership. Ruby says that she will give Alistair, the fallen angel, and in return, he'll let her and both Winchesters walk away. They don't want any part of this angel business. They just kind of stumbled into it and don't want to be there anymore. They just want to be free of this. But Alistair was expecting shenanigans, and two demons pop out from behind a shrub and grab Ruby's arms, and he's like, let me make you a counteroffer, and drags the blade of her own knife against her cheek. So we can assume that bad things are in Ruby's immediate future. Meanwhile, back at the barn, Dean is having his own confrontation with Uriel. He's not really. It's in his head. He's dreaming it. He's fallen asleep and is dreaming it, and that's how Uriel was able to find him. But Uriel is as condescending as ever towards humans and is like, oh, it's cute when monkeys wear clothes. Dean's first question after he realizes that he is dreaming this is, where's your boss? Did Castiel let you off leash? Uriel's like, you see, Castiel has this weakness. He likes you. Uriel tells Dean that his time is up and they want the girl now. And Dean tries to bluff his way out of that, saying, oh, too late. Anna got her grace back. Full-blown angel again. And Uriel just laughs at that and from beneath his shirt pulls out a vial that's glowing and is like, oh, you mean this grace? So he's clearly the one who stole it from that tree. Dean's like, well, why don't you just give it back to her then? She's an angel. Problem solved. And Uriel's like, no, she committed a crime. Uriel can't understand why Dean is not willing to hand Anna over anyway. I mean, aside from the fact that it's an innocent person who Dean is like not willing to let someone who trusted in him for her protection. He's not just going to hand them over to certain death. Uriel laughs and he's like, you cut yourself a slice of angel food cake, didn't you? And Dean's like, what do you care? You're junkless down there. And that's the first time that Dean ever refers to an angel as junkless. based off the angels in Dogma. So, like, a movie. He just assumes that if that's a good insult that works on angels, and it kind of does. Especially after what Anna told him about how angels are emotionally and just obedient and stone cold and emotionless. Uriel then threatens Dean one more time with throwing him back in hell, and Dean's like, I think you're bluffing. He knows what they've gone through to pull him out of hell. And Dean just stands there and faces him down, and he's like, okay, go ahead and do it. And Uriel walks right up to him, and Dean is like, yeah, what the hell, you know? If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, but I think you're bluffing. And he is terrified, clearly, but he was right. Uriel was bluffing. And Dean's like, yeah, I don't break easy. Uriel's like, oh, yes, you do. You just got to know where to apply the right pressure. And that kind of frightens Dean, because Dean knows exactly what it would take to threaten him into giving up Anna. And it's not throwing him back in hell. It's the threat against Sam. And we know that Uriel's not allowed to actually carry out that threat because of that cutscene with Cass. He's not allowed to carry out the threat of hurting Dean, for sure. Dean's the person they're trying to protect in all of this. Yet, Uriel keeps pushing this, even despite Cass's protest that he's coming dangerously close to disobeying his orders. And yet, next time we see the two of them together, it'll be Cass who's been punished and demoted. Interesting. But after that moment, when we see Uriel telling Dean about applying the right pressure, we cut to an absolutely abhorrent-looking building, someplace completely disgusting and dilapidated, with broken toilets and water damage and grime and filth and Ruby screaming. And yes, we understand that this is a method of torture, and that this is a demon who is a horrible piece of crap, and the way he's torturing her makes him look even crappier, and I understand that, but the fact that they had to strip Jen naked and strap her to this table with leather straps being the only thing that offered her any modesty as an actress, and tortured her in this way, because yes, this was torture for Jen, the actress, too, because apparently it was very cold where they were filming this. And she's acting out, pretending being cut and mutilated by this other demon. But did she really have to be naked for this scene to be this effective? I really don't think she had to be naked. I think that was a choice made by the producers of the show that I think it could have been just as effective if she was more clothed than not clothed at all. Just my opinion, but hey. What do I know? As Alistair is just cutting into her and just talking like they were having a normal conversation, he compliments the knife. Like, this knife of yours, it's an exquisite piece. You've really got to tell me where you found it. And I mean, honestly, wouldn't we all like to know that? Like, is this the only one of its kind? It's the only one we ever see in the entire series. No other hunter has a knife like it. Just Ruby. I'd really like to know where she found it. I mean, the only other person in the entire history of the entire series who we even has ever heard of a knife like this is Sam and Dean's grandfather, Henry, who knows of a demon-killing knife of the Kurds. And that must be that knife, but it's the only one we know of, so it may be a unique piece. Alistair then demands Ruby tell him where the Winchesters are hiding out with Anna. And she's like, I'm not that stupid. If I tell you, you'll just kill me. I'll show you where they are. She's trying to guarantee her own continued survival here, which is a very smart move. Though at this moment, it looks like she's completely deceiving the Winchesters, lying to them, and going to turn Anna over to Alistair, and gonna lead Alistair right to the Winchesters, which is a pretty damn big betrayal. At least it looks like that at the moment, doesn't it? But then we learn the truth of what she's doing and the bigger plan. Just like season 4. Things look a lot different once you know the truth of the bigger plan. So twisty and turny, since it's Ruby who looks like she's betraying them here, but nope, she was actually helping. And then at the end of the season, it looks like she's the one helping, but oops, no, it's a long con betrayal. Back at the barn where the Winchesters are hiding out, Sam's like pacing around worried, like, where's Ruby? And we're supposed to think, oh, Sam has no idea where Ruby is at all. And Dean's like, I don't know, she's your hell buddy. So we don't know the full context of that exchange because Sam knows exactly where Ruby was going. He's just concerned that she's not back yet. Dean's drinking from a flask, we presume whiskey. And Anna comes out and's like, it's a little early for that, isn't it? And Dean's like, it's 2 a.m. somewhere. I don't know what time it's supposed to be here, but they were supposed to have turned over Anna by midnight to the angels. And clearly they didn't do that. Who knows what time frame they're working on here? It's supernatural time. They were right to have been all tense because then all of a sudden the barn doors slam open and Cass and Uriel come in and then slam the barn doors shut behind them. So dramatic. But Cass says to Anna, hello, it's good to see you again. And Sam is outraged. He's holding an arm out in front of Anna to protect her and he's like, how? How'd you find us? Cass just gives Dean a little significant look, and Dean makes a slight little nod. He's the one who told the angels where they were hiding. Even Cass looks down as Sam and Anna realize what happened. Like, Cass is almost ashamed of this fact. But Sam is shocked that Dean would have done this, or at least he's playing at being shocked. Dean looks at Anna and says he's sorry. And Sam's like, why? And Anna answers. She knows how angels think. It's because they gave him no other choice. It was either they kill me or they kill you, Sam. Cass can't even look at her as she's leveling this accusation at him. So we know it's got to be the truth. Even though we know from that cutscene that when Uriel made that declaration to Dean, Cass disapproved of it. He said, that goes against our orders. You cannot kill Sam Winchester. Which goes a long way to explaining why Cass can barely look at them. Because he knows that Uriel would not have carried that order out, or Cass would have killed Uriel for disobedience. So even that was an empty threat. But everything Dean knows about angels so far, he believes it. And Anna clearly believes it too. Which does go probably a little too far for this particular episode in outing the fact that Uriel is working against heaven. While Cass watches, Anna gets up on her tiptoes and gives Dean a kiss and tells him, you did the best you could. I forgive you. She understands. Dean doesn't want that participation trophy. He doesn't want the you tried star. He wanted to actually win this one for her, but he couldn't. Just throw it on the pile of Dean Winchester's failures. Cass watches this exchange and then looks down. And I know that there's been meta written about this, that he's jealous of Anna or he's having feelings about Dean. And yeah, there might be a layer of that, or he's imagining being able to choose that for himself. Just the humanity of it. But it's the forgiveness, I think. It's one of the things that Anna mentioned that angels can't feel, true forgiveness, that she fell to become human to be able to feel. It was in her top three. So I do think that that is something. That's another poke at that. Cass, he may be curious about the whole kissing Dean thing, but I think he's also curious about being able to forgive like that, to feeling that powerful human emotion, even the bad ones, you know, even the ones that hurt. This is something that is intriguing to him, that Uriel would just dismiss as inferior things, but they drive humans to do these wonderful things as well. So it's something he's trying to understand and kind of terrified of even the chance that he might be feeling any of that, because what would that mean for him? He's about to execute Anna for this. And yet, he's afraid that what happened to her might be happening to him. Imagine being billions of years old and fearing that. What if it happens to me? What if I'm compelled to rebel and fight back and commit the greatest crime possible to my kind? What would be the consequences of that? Who would I even be if I made that choice like Anna did? the fear would just cause him to reject it at the, on the surface. And I think this is like one of the first times he's beginning to come to grips with that. And it's got to be terrifying for him. After that, Anna turns and bravely faces her fate. She's like, no more tricks, no more running. I'm ready. She knows exactly what they're going to do to her, and she is just going to stand there and force them to do it. Cass tells her, I'm sorry. And Anna's like, no, you're not. You don't even know the feeling. Cass doesn't argue with that. He doesn't flinch. He doesn't blink, because it doesn't bother him to hear that about himself. He believes he doesn't know the feeling. But he does feel pain over this. He's like, we do have history. And Anna's just pushing him along. She's like, yes, but orders are orders. Yes, I know. I get it. Just make it quick. Dean and Sam are both horrified and agonized that they're watching this go down. And Cass is clearly having reservations, or he would have just walked up and smited her. But just as she says that, another voice rings out. Don't you touch a hair on her head. It's Alistair, having been led there by Ruby, who is still bloody from her torture and being supported by two other demons because she can't stand on her own, as he suggested in that cutscene. Uriel's final comment in the cutscene was that he's going to go find something he can kill. Well, he just found it. It's Alistair. He's going to at least give that the old college try. He's very happy about this. Finally, someone in the room he's allowed to kill. Cass tries to order Alistair to turn around and walk away and let them carry out their task. And Alistair's like, yeah, sure, if you give me the girl. Cass is like, you know who we are and what we'll do. Leave now or we'll lay you to waste. And Alistair is not afraid of this. He's just like, I think I'll take my chances. We'll see how this goes. Which, if nothing else, should tell you just what a scary son of a bitch Alistair really is, and why Ruby was so afraid of him, why Dean is so terrified of him, and why Sam's confidence in the face of Alistair is just laughable. And yes, Sam does manage to eventually exorcise him, but it's another manipulation tool. The fact that everybody else is so terrified of this guy who seems overly powered for a demon, and yet he's even able to hurt angels. And Sam just confidently walks right up to him. No wonder he believes Dean is weak, because Sam is being lifted up, lifted up, lifted up with his powers and how special he is and how unique he is. And he's the only one who shouldn't be afraid of any of this. And everybody else is just too weak, including Cass, including Uriel, including Dean, everybody. So this is all part of that larger narrative. And of course, once again, the fight breaks out and Uriel goes to throwing punches instead of immediately just stabbing demons or smiting demons or going full angel blast on these demons. No, Uriel likes to get his hands a little bit dirty. So he just starts flinging them around, breaking barn posts and stunt coordinator stuff. But as he's throwing punches, the vial of Anna's grace comes tumbling out of his shirt. And it's plainly visible hanging around his neck. Guess what's going to happen with that? Meanwhile, Cass goes up to Alistair, delivers a few punches, blocks a couple of Alistair's punches on him, and immediately tries to smite Alistair. Sam and Dean are watching from where they got tossed aside to the ground, and nothing happens. Alistair has special protection against angels, somehow. Is that just a white-eyed demon thing? Is Lilith also immune to angels? How did this happen? Uriel doesn't have any trouble at all smiting the other low-level demons. Meanwhile, Cass is on the ground with Alistair holding him by the throat, reciting some Latin and apparently trying to banish Cass from his vessel or evict him from his vessel. I don't know exactly what his intent was or what he was going to succeed at, but Dean comes rushing in and clobbers Alistair in the face with a long piece of pipe or something. And that's where Alistair stands up and starts ranting at Dean about how he's so disappointed in Dean and how Dean had such promise. And Sam is looking like, what the hell is he talking about, Dean? You had promise? He's not allowed to say anything about that because Alistair cuts off their air. Meanwhile, Uriel is still exorcising the other lackey demon when Anna rushes over to him and grabs her grace hanging around his neck and smashes the vial on the floor. She swallows it all down as it swirls around her and takes over her body. Her whole body is emitting light and she's yelling, "Shut your eyes," to everybody else in the room. And obviously, Cass watches her just fine, like wondrously, as she takes on her angel form again. And it just explodes her body almost and takes a blast of light that sucks Alistair away with it. In the scuffle, Alistair dropped Ruby's knife and Dean picks it up. So, hey, at least they got something back from all of this. But Cass and Uriel no longer have Anna there to put to death. And the demon's gone, so all their problems seem to be solved for the time being. It's honestly one of the last times that we get to see Cass as a true antagonist, where we, the audience, don't yet know what is to come for him. And even Dean, as far as Dean's concerned, Cass is the antagonist here. When Cass and Uriel flap off to wherever, whether or not they're hunting Anna or not, that's when we get to see the full picture. Dean sighs in relief when the angels are gone. Ruby comes limping out from where she'd been cowering behind some hay bales, blood still soaking her shirt. And Sam's like, "Hey, are you okay?" And she's like, "Yeah, not so much." Dean is like, "What took you so long to get here?" And she's like, "Sorry, I was late with the demon delivery. I was only being tortured." So they were expecting the demon delivery. And Dean turns to Sam's like, "I gotta hand it to you, Sammy. Bringing them all together at once, angels and demons, that was a damn good plan." All of it had been their plan. Dean letting the angels know where they were. Ruby going to bring the demons to where they are. And letting them fight each other and hopefully then annihilate each other. And that's when Sam pulls out the line that he stole from Ruby, who used it on him earlier in the episode, which probably is what prompted the making of this plan anyway. It's like Godzilla versus Mothra, describing the angels and the demons. She's like, "You don't fight that, you just get out of the way." That's the line that Sam just used to explain the plan to Dean. And Ruby looks at him like, "Dude, you stole my line. That's so rude." Which is also kind of funny in the context of Dean saying that to Anna earlier in this episode, "You're stealing my best line," when she's like, "Yeah, last night on Earth." A line, incidentally, Dean will use on Cass in season 5. So, hey, they try and insist that it's a different context, but we already know he thinks of that as his best line. Sam goes on to muse about Anna, the fact that she got her grace back and that she's all powered up in an angel again. And he's like, "She must be really happy." And Dean's like, "I doubt it." He knows how little she wanted that. He knows that she would have given anything not to have to do that. So yeah, wherever she is, she's not happy. And even if she doesn't remember the fact that she didn't want that, she wouldn't be happy because she couldn't feel happiness as an angel. That's the whole reason she fell in the first place. So, yeah, wherever she is, happiness has nothing to do with it. We get one final scene in this episode. Sam and Dean sitting on the Impala's hood having a beer, just sort of celebrating the fact that they survived that experience. But it's also a chance for Dean to come clean with Sam. He starts off with his back towards Sam. He can't even face Sam. Dean's like, "I know you heard him, Alistair. What he said about how I had promise." Sam says, "Yeah, he's curious. He would have asked, but you're not talking about hell and I'm not pushing," which good for him that he was actually trying to honor Dean's wishes for once after he hadn't been all season long. I think he has a little more perspective on what Dean's been through at this point now, having met the demon who was apparently what Dean's experience of hell was. Dean lets that sit for a minute and then He starts off easy with the information that it wasn't 4 months to him. It felt more like 40 years. Sam just tries to absorb that and is horrified. Dean describes the experience of having been torn apart over and over again, only to be put back together. And Alistair would offer every day to take Dean off the rack if he would agree to put souls on, to become the torturer. And the horror of Sam's face as Dean says that he refused, told him to stick it where the sun shines. Every day, for 30 years, he refused. And it takes Sam a second to do that math. And when he does, he's mortified. Like, oh my God. He resisted that every day for 30 years and then caved and broke. Poor Dean is still just breaking down, still can't even think about turning around and facing Sam. He's just feeling the horror at himself of what he did. And Sam's trying to reassure him. He's like, you held out for 30 years. That's longer than anyone would or could. And then as he finally breaks apart, he's telling Sam how I feel inside me. I wish I couldn't feel a damn thing. This is, remember, after the whole conversation with Anna about why she chose to fall, why she chose to rip out her grace. She chose to feel these human emotions, even the terrible ones, even the ones she had to imagine that Dean was feeling in that moment, because she knew all about what he did in hell. She knew, and she forgave him, and she said none of it was his fault, and yet Dean still condemns himself for all of it. Does not want to feel it, and can't imagine why Anna would even want to risk feeling even a slightly bad emotion. To him right now, the whole idea of not being able to feel anything would be perfect. That's just not how humanity works. And he is the epitome of humanity on this show. And that's how the episode ends, with Dean in tears and Sam left speechless, and the apocalypse still rolling in the background, but their angel and demon problems getting exponentially worse. Even when they've got a temporary little win here, they know they bluffed their way through that one. They know that next time they may not get off so easy. They have no idea how to stop whatever it is that's coming. And it's terrifying and awful, and it just, you still feel so far above their pay grade. And in Sam's eyes, Dean's collapsing. He's clearly weakened by his experience in hell. He can't even handle his own emotions. Remember, this is a guy who's put on a front of everything's going to be fine. We're not scared at all. Nah, we'll just keep marching right through this. Even like Sam's entire life. He did it even in this episode with Anna when they were back in Bobby's panic room. Even you guys are scared. And Dean's like, ah, nah. While Ruby's looking right at him. That is the face that Sam is used to Dean being able to present to him. When Dean does have a moment like this where he breaks down and shows his humanity, Sam doesn't really know what to do with it at all. And poor Cass is having his own crisis of humanity wherever he's flapped off to. That leaves so many open questions that are absolutely not going to be answered in next week's episode. Season 4, Episode 11, Family Matters, or one of those episodes that everybody always forgets exists or does their best to try to forget it exists, because what the hell? Remember, that one was a mid-season premiere. This was the mid-season finale. When we pick up this show again 2 months after the original air date of this episode, it's like the show has amnesia or something. But we still don't know the full extent of Dean's confession that he's going to finish making next week. And things get hard. Things are going to get harder and harder, because now we're going to be in the second half of the season where we're tumbling towards the season finale. And we, the audience, are going to start getting a gradually larger picture of the truth of what's going on. And it's going to get dicey. Anyhoodle, until next week. You can find me on Tumblr and Twitter at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. And I'm probably doing Gish at this very moment, so there might be a bit of a delay. You can find me on Discord at mittens hashtag 4865, or you can email me at mittensmorgel@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon, because, hoo boy, what an episode to leave off on. I hope everybody who is gishing is having a great time and not disappearing into that portal that they keep using in the ads. Anyway, don't forget to hydrate if you're gishing. And I can't believe you'd actually stop gishing to listen to this podcast, but hey, maybe it's on in the background. If so, hey, good luck, go you. If you have no idea what gish is, go to gish.com and learn. It's too late to register for this year, but you know, there's always next year. Anyway, back to probably trying to glue myself to something or by accident or whatever it is I'm doing now. Since I'm recording this, you know, like a week and a half before I post it. The magic of the internet. Have a good one, everyone.